Well, Matthew, speaking of Luke utilizing Roman and Greek sources, I know that you and I have talked about an idea that a sort of reflection of some of the Greek and Roman sources that we read reflected in Luke. And I should tell the people listening, I don't know if many people would agree with us. This is maybe pure Matthew and Bo thought here. But we're big readers in ancient and classical literature. I mean, we're right now doing a reading group with Homer and the Iliad. And both of us have sort of seen this, that Luke really does seem to be a man that is cosmopolitan for his time, not only very familiar with the Jewish elements
right.
of what's going on for someone that tradition says is not a Jew,
yeah.
But also willing to incorporate the larger ancient world to make sense of this Jesus and his followers.
Yeah. I would, they cover a lot of the same territory, or the same, they're in the same areas that you have in the Iliad. I've gone and I've tried to like make some parallels between the Iliad and Acts, and I just can't make it work.
Right.
So I'll say that first of all. There is another scholar. His name is Dennis Ronald MacDonald.
Awesome.
Dennis Ronald MacDonald. I don't know too much what to think about his theories. He's written a lot of stuff where he tries to say basically the New Testament. And I don't like the way he puts it. He kind of makes it sound like the New Testament is a knockoff of Homer. And that is overstating it, yeah. Without a doubt. And he sees Homer all over the place. He wrote a book where he tries to say that the Gospel of Mark is really based on the Odyssey. And okay. I think he raises interesting questions. I think it's worthwhile to do comparative studies like this, but he's way, he states it way too strongly, mm-hmm. in my opinion. He's written a book on Acts where he picks four episodes from Acts and tries to link them back to the Iliad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he tries too hard. For instance, all of the dreams, the visions,
right.
he tries to say, well, this is just like
right.
this dream that happens in Iliad. And it's not just like that. You can find evidence for this sort of thing, you can find that kind of stuff in Jewish sources.
Right.
You don't have to go to Homer for dreams and visions.
Right.
That said, I do think there are some... what intrigues me about Luke are his speeches.
Right.
And one thing that you find in the Iliad is, it's full of action, but then Homer mercifully gives us these long breaks, these long pauses, and one of his pauses that he uses is he'll put a great big long speech. He'll go on for pages
mm-hmm.
sometimes of in the mouth of one of the heroes, quite frequently Nestor.
Mm-hmm.
And invariably this hero, before they often break out in the speech before the action, before they meet in battle with the foe. And invariably they recount their personal history, their genealogy, or everything that kind of led up to this moment that they're about to go into battle. And if you look at the speech forms in Acts, they have a very similar kind of purpose, I think. A lot of times, you think about the sermon of Stephen, the longest speech
mm-hmm.
in Acts, right before he's taken out to be killed. So you have this action, this intense first martyrdom, this
right.
intense episode about to take place. And then you have this long speech that kind of allows you to catch your breath before
right.
they take him out and kill him. And that speech, what does he do? He tells the whole history of Israel
mm-hmm.
and leads them right up to the moment that they're getting ready to kill him.
Yep.
He's saying, I'm basically giving an apology for himself
right.
for why he's preaching what he is. And I think that you don't have anything like this really in the Old Testament. The one place I can kind of think of is in the book of Judges, in the story of Jephthah.
Mm-hmm.
He writes kind of a letter to the king of the Ammonites, who is accusing Israel of stealing their territory. And it kind of recounts the history, but it's
Maccabees a little bit with the mother and her son.
Yeah, that's true.
But the reason that I think this is fascinating to bring up, not, like I said, not that we're breaking some secret, and let me always point out again, I make this in the journal, that when we're talking about these interpretive ideas, it's not to say that there's some secret of the Acts of the Apostles that you're missing just because
right.
you haven't heard Bo and Matthew, you know, blavate about Homer. But what we're saying is there's a certain resonance that this demonstrates. People yeah. are really prone to try to say, well, what's Jewish and what's Gentile about the New Testament? Or that there must be some one right way or that will... Acts will become so familiar, like when we look at the sermons in Acts, we go like, oh, there you go, there's the preachers just preaching again. And what I wanted Matthew to bring this up for is, no, maybe what Luke has in mind is, here's these heroes
yeah.
speaking before their great battle.
I think so, yes.
And that it makes a lot of difference to think that Luke was not just emulating... some sort of historical form where he was just recalling what happened, but he's evoking epics. That the Acts of the Apostle is not only the epic of the apostles, but the epic of the Holy Spirit. This is
yes.
this is the war of yeah. the Holy Ghost as he takes on this empire, this Rome. And of course, the battle's different, and the weapons are different, mm-hmm. and the battlefield looks different. But this is epic stuff.
Yes.
So much so that the hero apostles stop and recount
yes.
history up to this point before the great battles and beatings and fightings and travel all occurs.
Yeah, I absolutely. That's what I'm trying to say. But one thing that really kind of substantiates this for me is when you compare the sermons in Acts to Jewish sermons
mm-hmm.
from the same period. And they're very different. I mean, we have a lot of Jewish sermons. We call them Midrash.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just way, way different stuff. They do recount the history of Israel, but they fill it with all kinds of fanciful things that you've never heard of before to make it... They have a lot more fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
But in Acts, it's kind of... It's a very sober retelling, similar to what you get in the Iliad.
And, you know, there's so many of these dimensions, and each one has their own unique... flavor depending on what's yeah. going on. Not you mentioned St. Stephen's, but we start out with St. Peter, right? St. Peter's
yeah.
great response to the accusation that these men must be drunk on new wine. And we end with
yeah.
St. Paul defending himself before, well, I mean, there's a few later. He talks before Agrippa and these things, but I'm thinking in Jerusalem, he has that last great
yeah.
defense of himself. Where the Jews are tracking with him generally, and then he talks about the mission to the Gentiles, and this is when the riot really starts.
Yeah,
and then he goes inside, and then he pits the Pharisees and the Sadducees against each other by resurrection.
But and in that same speech, he also recounts his own conversion story.
Yes.
Which is funny because Luke's already told us this
right,
in Acts chapter
right.
9.
Yeah, it's the second time we hear it, but in a new context, in
yeah.
a new way.
Yeah. So, again, it just shows that Luke really wants us to hear these speeches and to, there's something going on there, and I think it's Homeric.
And, I mean, sometimes, you know, this, we moderns miss this because the plot devices we use to show action and tension and stuff, of course, they've changed over time.
Yeah.
But the book of Acts has a lot of... tension and a lot of activity. I mean, people can read the book of Acts and not realize that Paul was snuck out over a wall in a basket.
Yeah.
You know, that's how close he was to dying, and that's the
yeah.
shenanigans he had to pull in order to not right. face these mobs that were going to beat him to death.
It's like Mission Impossible type stuff.
Yeah, no, it really is, and they do all sorts of crazy stuff, and you know, just the scene of the shipwreck, for instance.
Yeah.
I think people like lose how of dire straits they're talking about. They were talking about throwing all of their grain overboard,
yeah.
And you don't do that unless you think you are imminently going to die.
Right? Yeah. Well, the other thing I was thinking of as we're talking about the speeches is you could really, if you didn't have another book of the Bible,
mm-hmm.
if all you had was Acts, you would have a pretty, you would be able to piece together fairly well the story of salvation, the entire history of Israel up to Christ and his ascension into glory. If all you had was Acts, you could do that. And that's similar to the Iliad as well. The Iliad, a lot of our myth, our the mythology that we know about Greece comes from these embedded speeches in the Iliad. And you kind of know, for instance, the Iliad doesn't ever get to Achilles' death.
No, but you know it's going to happen.
You know it's going to happen because they talk about it so much.
And it's similar in Acts. You just know that the church is going to reach Rome. Yep. And it's never as explicit. They're not talking about... I don't think we ever get like a dream or a foretelling. No. But, you know, and maybe I'm just letting like multiple reads bleed into this, but it's just like the whole... dynamic movement of Acts.
Yeah.
You know that they're going to end up in Rome, in the most important place. And,
right.
And it's even funny, too, because, you know, they keep... Paul ends up accidentally in Rome. I mean, more than once, they're told if he would have just not made his appeal to Caesar, he could have walked away a free man.
I don't think it was an accident.
No, I know. Well, right, yes. But, I mean, that's what I mean is, like, compared to the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire would just as soon leave this guy alone.
Oh, yeah. It's like he puts himself under the duress of remaining in imprisonment.
Right.
Just so he can get the gospel to Rome. Because it's a free boat ride
to
Rome.
Right. Half the time I think that he made the move to be imprisoned 2 years. There's twice where he's in prison for 2 years. Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, he probably just needs time to write. He wants to take a break.
I know.
You don't get beat in prison as much as you were outside the walls. So he's like, just arrest me so I can write some letters. Yeah.